Shavua Tov. This is a recap of the shiur from Shabbos afternoon, Parshios Matos Maaseh, and it was dedicated anonymously in honor of, my online shiurim and source sheets, and in the merit of a successful surgery for Sarah Rachel Bas Rivka Hinda on Monday. She should have a refuah shlema. So we're at the top of Yud Amud Aleph. We're really not the top. We're about two-thirds of the way down Yud Amud Aleph. And we had a discussion about whether Ksuba is De'oraisa or De'rabanan, because we're talking about the fact that the Gemara is willing to believe a man to say that his wife was not a Besula. And on basis of, as we've discussed, this psychological assumption that he would not go through all the process of marrying her in order to undermine everything and undo the marriage. So the concern that we have was, well, if you say Ksuba is De'oraisa, that can make sense. There's a De'oraisa institution, there's a biblical institution of having a Ksuba, and he has the ability to do this. However, if you understand Ksuba to be rabbinic, then the purpose of the rabbinic enactment is to protect her. Why in the world would you create an institution to protect her if he has the ability to undermine that institution by claiming that she wasn't a Besula? We noted, as we've discussed previously, that Tosfos Chazaka on Yud Amud Aleph says that, in fact, he would only be believed in the event that the result of his claim would be the demolition of the marriage. If it would not lead to the demolition of the marriage, then the whole psychological assumption of you wouldn't have gone through everything in order to undermine it falls apart, and therefore he actually would not be credible in such a case, according to Tosfos. But in any case, we finished the discussion about whether Ksuba is De'oraisa or De'rabanan, mapped out the positions. So what we noted today is Tosfos Amar of Nachman, the top Tosfos on the Amud, which begins by saying that it sounds like Shmuel believes that Ksuba is rabbinic, and he pointed to a Gemara in Yevamos Daf Peites, which also says, just along the way in the discussion, that Ksuba is derabbanan. They'd ask, why did the rabbis create Ksuba? That implies that it's rabbinic. So his problem is that the language in the Ksuba is that we write that the fellow is going to give her kesef zuze masan 200 zuz dechazu lechi mideoraisa, which you deserve biblically. So that sounds like Ksuba is in fact a deoraisa. So Rabbeinu Tam says, indeed, we paskin that Ksuba is biblical. But we have so many voices that seem to say it's rabbinic. True, however, we saw last time Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel from the Mishnah at the end of Ksuvos, who seems to say that Ksuba is De'oraisa. The discussion at the end of Ksuvos was the question of what currency you use to pay the Ksuba in the event that the marriage happened in one jurisdiction and the divorce happened in a separate one. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said that his ruling there indicated Ksuba is De'oraisa. So Rabbeinu Tam says, we're paskening like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel that Ksuba is in fact De'oraisa. And that's why we say the De'oraisa in the Ksuba. However, we noted that most posts can follow the Rush. And the view of the Rush in Ksubos Aleph Yates, I put it on the source sheet, is that Ksuba is in fact De'rabanan. Well, then why does the Ksuba say the money that you deserve De'oraisa? So the Rush explains what we're talking about is the quality of the currency that is used in it, the level, not really the quality, the level of the currency that is used. Specifically, when we say it's kesef de'oraisa, it's shkalim ha'amurim b'torah, the size of the shekel that is specified in the Torah. And so what we're saying is that money, dechazu lechi, which is suitable for you, mide'oraisa, meaning the quality that is suitable for you, de'oraisa, to pay that which is a fundamentally rabbinic institution. We noted as well in the discussion, if you look at the Raman, Ibn Ezer, Samach Vav, that means that the standard understanding of the ratio between the ksuba of a besula and an almana, first marriage and later marriages, is not 2-to-1. Meaning, if you ask a random person who has learned the Gemara in Ksuvos, what is the ratio between the Besula's Ksuba and the Almana's Ksuba, they look at you and say, well, obviously it's 2-to-1, right? It's 200 zuz for the Besula, 100 zuz for a non-Besula. However, that's not true, because the type of coin that we're talking about, which is a shekel de'oraisa, is actually much larger than the standard shekel. So that the zuz that you're talking about, when we say 200 zuz, it's not just about the shekel coin per se, the 200 zuz you're talking about is actually many multiples greater than the 100 zuz for ksuva that is not with the de'oraisa coins of the almana. If you want to know more about that and what the ratio is, take a look at the Ramah, Ebenu Ezer, Samach Vav, Vav. Everybody agrees, even those who hold that ksuba is de'oraisa, everybody agrees that there are rabbinic components to it. So the Gemara in ksuba's Pei Beis Amud Aleph is going to talk about having a lien on, an automatic lien on the chassan's property for payment of the ksuba. That is definitely a derabanan enacted by Shimon ben Shetach. So there are elements that are derabanan. Okay. The Gemara then takes us in a different direction. And it's basically undermining everything we've said in this sugya before. Ha! Meaning, we said until now that the guy is able to say that she was not a basula and in fact be believed on the basis of the psychological assumption we've already made, as well as the fact that, really, she's the one who claimed that she was a basula, he's claiming she's not a basula, why should I believe her over him? To which you can make arguments, but that's not the point right now. We decide that we believe him. What we're now doing is we're basically rolling that back. And we look at the way that Rabbanan actually dealt with being approached by men claiming their wife was not a basula. So we are about two-thirds of the way down the page. Daf Yud Amud Aleph. It's about 20 lines up from the bottom. Hahuda Asla Kameid Rav Nachman. Guy comes to Rav Nachman. Amalei Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. He says there were no basulim. It was open. Amalei Rav Nachman Asbuhu Kufri. Rav Nachman says you should whip him with spiked palm branches. So there, you should hit him. What in the world is going on? So the next three words are subject to a debate between Rashi and Tosfos. Reading it the way that Rashi, I'm going to go with the Tosfos approach first. Reading it the way Tosfos reads it, it's a question. Mi birkasa chavita lei, or mavrachta perhaps, ma chavita lei. The way that Tosfos reads the line, it is a question. He's saying, did he have the zonos, the women of ill repute, of either Birkasa or Mavrachta, not clear what the name of the place is, but did he have these women at his disposal? Meaning, this guy just got married. What does he know from Pesach Pasuach? What does he know from whether this is her first time or not? Was he involved with the zonos? In other words, Tosus is accusing him of libel. Tosus is saying, you are saying something that is, an out-and-out lie against this woman. We should have this guy whipped for saying something so terrible about her. That's Tosus' read of it. Rashi reads it as a statement, and it's not that he's lying, but rather that he is engaged in immorality. Rashi reads it as, we should whip him because the zonos of Mavrachta are with him, meaning, how did he get this information? How does he know whether, indeed, this is their first time or not? It must be that he's involved with the zonos of this place. So according to the first view in Tosfos, this is an accusation of libel against him. According to Rashi, it's an accusation of immorality. Interestingly, it was noted at the Shir, there is a third possibility, aside from the possibility that what he's saying is true, and leave aside that. We're not even dealing with the veracity of the accusation so much. But there's also the possibility that he's just, naive. In other words, he's a guy who learned ksuvos. He knows there's such an issue as Pesach Pasuach. He got married, and he was with his wife, and he thinks that there's no basulim. He may be right, he may be wrong, but you don't have to assume that he had, either illicit experiences or bad intentions, the way that Rashi and Tosfos seem to be assuming. But that doesn't seem to be in the conversation, because Rav Nachman certainly doesn't treat him that way. Rav Nachman says, let's take him and whip him. So the Gemara says, wait, we learned the top of the page. In the top of the page, Rav Nachman quoted Shmuel, quoting Rav Shimon ben Elazar, to say, in fact, that the guy is believed. So what in the world is this business of whipping him? Rav Nachman says he's credible. So the Gemara gives us two answers. First, Mehemen, Umasinu my kufri. Yeah, you're right, we believe him. However, we whip him because he came by this knowledge inappropriately. And that's like Rashi's read, and Tosfos here will have to agree at this stage that what we're saying is, we believe him, he's telling the truth. However, he got his knowledge inappropriately. Rav Achoy Mishani, Rav Achoy gives me a different answer. Kan b'bach or kan b'nasui. It depends on whether this is the first marriage or not. If it's the first marriage, then Rav Nachman is objecting and saying, how did this guy come by the information? But if it's not his first marriage, we know how he got the information. And there was nothing inappropriate about it. But what Rav Nachman shows us is, it's not so simple to claim Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. That's the upshot of this. Then we have Rabbi Gamliel. And Rabbi Gamliel introduces to us another possible explanation for what went wrong. And in order to understand the biology, to understand what Rabbi Gamliel is talking about, you have to know a little bit about the biology here. So, from a purely biological perspective, and I acknowledge that some of the things in the discussion about Besulim and the Gemara are very hard to fit with our understanding of biology. The idea that it grows back if the girl was under 3 when she lost the Besulim is very hard to sustain biologically. When I say very hard, I mean I don't know how to sustain it biologically. But just be aware of where what this is all about. When a woman is a fetus still, so the channel that will ultimately be where Bia takes place is closed. It's filled. However, after she is born or in the birth process, I don't know the specifics of the embryology, but at some point the tissue that's inside disintegrates, leaving only the membrane at the entrance that is known as the hymen, and over time that will disintegrate as well. And that's something the Gemara seems to be familiar with, because the Gemara further ahead on Daf Lamed Zayin is going to say that this entire discussion that we've been having, the whole business about claiming Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, is actually only relevant if you're talking about a girl who is under the age of 12 and a half, who is not yet a Bogeres. Once a girl is a Bogeres, then lots of things happen that cause her to lose the Besulim, and what we know is that the Besulim simply disintegrate. So it's entirely possible that the hymen is gone for entirely legitimate reasons at that point, and it can be disintegrating even earlier, which is where we go with this Gemara. Because the Gemara is going to talk about, Rabbi Gamliel is going to talk about the possibility that the man thinks that there are no Besulim, but in fact, he found a gap because the hymen's disintegrating. So it's what Rabbi Gamliel calls hataya, inclining. There are two versions of it in the Gemara. So let's take a look at the Gemara and see. We are now about 15 lines or so up from the bottom. Hahuda asla kamed Rabbi Gamliel. Guy comes to Rabbi Gamliel. Amalei pesach pasuach matzasi. There were no basulim there. Amalei shema hitisa. And he says, wait, maybe you went around, meaning maybe not you went around the entire thing, but maybe there's a gap in the hymen. And then Rabbi Gamliel explains how that could have happened by accident. In this version, it is accidental. We'll see a second version of Rabbi Gamliel shortly. He says, He says, I will give you a parable to explain this. I don't know what Rabbi Gamliel's parable is doing here, meaning I don't really understand why he needed a parable to explain this. I have not seen an explanation for what this parable is doing here. Nonetheless, he said to him, here is a parable to explain this. It's like you have a guy who is walking in the dark at night, and he's trying to get into the entrance, into the house. Hita mitzo pasuach, lo hita mitzo no. So in the event that he goes to the side, then he finds the door open. If he doesn't, then he finds the door locked. So it's all a matter of how you approach the entrance. Ika de Amri, second version of it, is he says it was intentional that you did this. Hachi Amarle, this is what he said. Shema b'mezit hitisa. Maybe you did this on purpose. Avoiding the Besulim. Va'akris ledasha ve'avra. You literally uprooted the door and the bolt. Em shalacha mashalama davar domet. What is this comparable? La'adav shayim ha'alech b'yishon layla va'afela. Guy's walking in the dark. Hita b'mezit mitzah pasuach. In the event that he inclines intentionally, he will be able to get in. Lo hita b'mezit mitzah no. If he doesn't do it on purpose, then he will find it locked. So the idea here is that he found his way. In this version, it happens because he intentionally did this. So says Rabban Gamliel here. We then get a third approach to defusing the claims that Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, it's not really Pesach Pasuach, it's a claim that there was no blood. And this involves someone who is identified here in the Gemara, in our edition, as Rabbi Gamliel Bar Rebbe. There are other editions that have it as Berebbe. And here, in the Shir, we took a minute to note something that I put on the source sheet that is worth thinking about, because we never really, talk about it. The line of Rabban Gamliel, because the name Gamliel and Shimon ben Gamliel appear a lot in it, people get a little bit confused. So he took the time to go through it. Hillel HaZaken is the Nasi. Okay, that's the famous Hillel. Imeinani limili, that Hillel. Hillel has a son. His son is named Gamliel. That's Rabban Gamliel HaZaken, Rabban Gamliel the Elder. He wasn't born being called HaZaken. He earned that one over time. But that's Rabban Gamliel the First. That Rabban Gamliel has a son whose name is Shimon. That's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, as I put on the sheet, the martyr. He's the one from the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs who are read about on Yom Kippur and until this year on Tisha B'Av. The one where Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon ben Elisha have a debate about who's going to get killed first. So that's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel the First, son of Rabbi Gamliel the First. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has a son whose name is Gamliel. He is known as Rabbi Gamliel Berebi, which is different from Bar Rebbe that you're seeing here. Rabbi Gamliel the Great, also known as Rabbi Gamliel the Second, is the one we know best of the Rabban Gamliels. He's the one you see in the Mishnah all the time with Rabbi Akiva. He's the one in the Gemara in Brachos with Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. That's Rabbi Gamliel the Second. So you're now the generation right with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and afterwards. Then you have his son, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. He's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel who you see in the Mishnah. He's the one who Tosfos said he follows, Rabbi Natam said he follows, to say the Ksuba is De'oraisa. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, when he appears in a Mishnah, is always right, other than in three cases. That's with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He's the second Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He has a son, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, also known as Rebbe, canonizer of the Mishnah. And then he has a son, Rabbi Gamliel Bar Rebbe, son of Rebbe. That's Rabbi Gamliel III, the one who's going to show up in our story here. So the previous story was the Rabbi Gamliel II. He was the one who gave the parable about how the guy avoided the Besulim. And now we're going to get Rabbi Gamliel III. He is of that bridge generation between the Tanoim and Amoraim, around the time of Rav and Shmuel. So you've got Hillel, Rabbi Gamliel I, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel who was murdered, Rabbi Gamliel II, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi / Rebbe, and then Rabbi Gamliel Bar Rebbe. That's the family line. Okay, hopefully this is helpful for people. So, fellow comes to this Rabbi Gamliel III. Ha'udah Asla Kamed Rabbi Gamliel Bar Rebbe. We're on the first wide line. Amalei Rebbe Ba'alti V'lo Matzasi Dam. He said, I had relations and there was no blood. Amrla Rebbe Besula Hayisi. She says, what are you talking about? I was a Besula. Amar Lahem Haviu Li Oso Suder. So he says, bring me the sheet. The sheet from the bed. Haviu Lo Asuder. They brought him the sheet. Ushra'o b'mayim v'chibso, and he laundered it. He soaked it in water and he laundered it. Umatza alav kamatipe damim, and he found blood on it, right? Because the other fluids that would have been there all washed away. Blood doesn't wash away so easily. So then he finds the blood. Amar lo lech zechei b'mekchacha, and he says, it's all good. You're married. Don't worry about it. Everybody's fine. So Amar Lehuna Mar Brei de Rava mi Priskia. So Huna Mar, son of Rava of Priskia, says Li Rav Ashi. So this is a later generation. Rav Ashi is the end of the period of the Gemara. He says Ananami Navet Hachi. He says, hey, could we do that too? Maybe we should be able to use that test. Amar Le Gihutz Shelanu Kikibus Shelahem. He says it doesn't work that way. Why? And this is a discussion actually that comes up regarding laundry in the 3 weeks and the 9 days as well. He says, our laundering is not like their laundering. Rashi says differences in the water as well as differences in the detergent. I am not clear on what that's referring to, but that's what he says. Our laundering is not as effective as their laundering. We have a process called gihutz, on the other hand, which is a stone washing. They rub the laundry in stones. That is the equivalent of their laundering. Nu ve'i amrit nave gihutz. And if you'll say, well, let's do the gihutz process, that's no good. It's too harsh. ma'abra lechumarta, the rubbing of the stones would remove any blood. So that's not going to work either. So therefore, he says, we don't have the means of doing this. We still have to see one more case of this. Well, more than one more case of this. We're going to see further how they dealt with these charges, but you can already see from what we've seen that claiming Pesach Pasuach Matzasi was not as simple as everybody might think. Okay, I hope, God willing, Mashiach comes, we'll be able to have a shiur next Shabbos.